Hola, queridas, queridos. Welcome back to the Beam and Flow podcast, a nitty-gritty exploration of your body, energy, awareness, movement, and flow. I am your host, Chloe Cofresi. Here we go. Enjoy the show. Hola, queridas. So I just wanted to take a little moment to introduce this really special episode. So I recorded this episode with Vicky and Key 6 months ago after they were my guests for season one of the podcast, Vicky and Key of Surviving the City. We talked about their marriage and their relationship in the first season. And while we were recording that episode, we decided to just stick around for a little bit longer and record some more, except that we flipped the tables. And Vicky and Key interviewed me about how my knowledge of relationships has changed over the past few years. I was married for 11 years. I've been divorced now for almost 6 years. And a lot has changed for me. And I just wanted to, before we start the episode, say that stuff has changed even more in the last 6 months since we recorded this episode. I have not dated anyone in the 6 months since we recorded. And I'm in such a wonderful place that I've reached such a wonderful place on my own in this sacred season for myself that it has completely shifted what I'm looking for in terms of dating. Or I guess I shouldn't say it has shifted, it has solidified. That's a better way of saying it. It has solidified what I'm looking for and placed it, and it's coming from a different perspective. So what do I mean by that? I am not coming from any place of lack in terms of what I'm looking for in a partner. My life is amazing. I have a beautiful life. I've created a beautiful life for myself. And I would love to share that with someone. So what does that mean? What am I looking for? And how am I not coming from urgency or lack with it? Okay, so there are three things that are a must before I engage sexually or romantically with someone. And then I'm open to see what life has to bring from there. Do I still want children? Yes, but more than wanting children, I want a family. And a family starts with the relationship being the best that it can be. Because I definitely don't want to be a single mom. So before there's any talk of family, there's talk of how do I move from this beautiful, expansive, powerful place on my own to somewhere even deeper that I might not even be able to imagine with someone else. To even get there, there's three things that I have to see in order to say yes to someone. One, does my body respond? And I'll get real honest about what that means. Am I dripping for you? Do you make me drip? Is my body an open, resounding yes? That's number one. Number two, are you actually available? And I don't just mean single. I mean fully available emotionally, spiritually, psychically. Are you available to be with me? Are you available to lead me? Which brings me to number three. Can you lead me somewhere spiritually and energetically that I cannot take myself? I can take myself to some pretty deep places, and I still want more, which means that the person that I'm with has got to have such an ability to create a container for my energy and my flow that I feel like I can trust them to take me deeper so that I can flow deeper. That means that they have to have presence. That means there's a lot of things that go into those three factors. And if I'm seeing those three factors, then I'm a yes to seeing what's coming after that. I'm a yes to expansive love. I'm a yes to transformative, divine intimacy. I'm a yes, a hell yes, to that. I am not a yes to, this could be nice, let's see where it goes. I am not a yes to, oh, I'll do whatever you want. I am not a yes to, oh, you tell me this, I'll do it. I'm ready. No, I need to see in your life that you can contain all that I can bring, because I bring so much to the table. And it's not about a power exchange, and it's not about even reciprocity. It's about spiritual growth and transformation. And that will come through sexually. So if that's not happening, I am more than content on my own. Not because I'm not waiting or looking. I am content deepening myself into the person that magnetizes someone who can lead me even deeper. That magnetizes that king energy. That's what I'm looking for. And that's not coming from a place of lack. That's coming from wow, look at how abundant my life is. Look at how amazing this is. For me to give all of this energy to someone else, it's because they're this expansive too. And they can take me even deeper. My dreams have come true to such a wild extent that it's going to take a really rare person to let me dream even deeper and even bigger and help me make that happen, just like I can help them make their dreams happen. So I wanted to preface this episode with that. You're going to hear a lot in this episode. I get real honest about mistakes that I've made and mistakes that I see other people making. And we're going to explore that together in the nitty-gritty. So here we go. Flipping the tables and letting Vicky and Key of Surviving the City interview me. Hasta luego.
Okay, so this is a special little bonus episode. And to be totally honest, I don't know how you all are going to hear this yet. I don't know if it's going to be all released in one. I don't know if it's going to be like pieces on Instagram or I don't know. But this was bonus. So if you liked a little tidbit of the conversation that I had with Vicky and Key, then you're going to really love this because we're going to dive in and we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to hand the hosting reins to Vicky and Key, who are pros and have their own podcast, and I'm going to have them interview me so that you all can hear a little bit more about me and who I am in addition to just the hosting, Chloe. You're going to hear Chloe, the interviewee now. So I'm gonna pass it off to Vicky and Key.
Perfect. Hello, I'm Vicky.
Hello, I'm Key.
And we're back with Chloe, and we're going to ask her some questions. So we're going to dive right in. We want to talk to you about relationships, right?
I'm here for it.
The energy of relationships. And so one of the things, we know that you were in a marriage and really a relationship for 11 years, no? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were married for 11 years. Yeah,
married for 11 years. Okay. And you've been single now for 5 years.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
And I think you actually pointed this out to me the other day that that's basically almost half of the time that you were together.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things we wanted to know is, what do you know about the energy of relationships or relationship energetics now that you didn't know even at the end of your marriage?
Oh my God, that's such a great question. I would say that what I know now is it is very difficult to make a relationship work, if not impossible, to make a relationship work if both people are not committed to their own personal growth and their own version of their best, biggest life. The other part of it is that we fundamentally wanted different things. And one thing that I know now, after not just my marriage, but 5 years of dating in my 30s in New York City, God help me. I don't know. Sometimes I don't know how I'm still here. But one thing that I do believe is trust what people tell you at first. Yeah. When they first tell you something, that's usually what they mean. And they may change their mind because they care about you later. But generally, when someone says, this is what I know to be true for myself, it's what is true for them. So what I mean by that is, when we first got together, he wasn't entirely sure that he wanted to have kids, but he had said, like, I don't believe in marriage. I don't believe in love.
In love.
In love. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't believe in love. That was just a fairy tale idea. That's not reality.
Very avant-garde.
Yes, very much
wait,
so.
Wait, what does that mean, to not believe in love?
Like, what he would say, like, love is just like a movie story. It's not real. Like, he would be like, it's too metaphysical, right? It's too ethereal. There's no scientific thing I can touch and feel and say this is love. This is a couch. I can say this is a couch that I'm sitting on.
Wow, I guess I fundamentally disagree.
I do too. I think there is
no, because right.
Well, part of the reason why.
Yeah, it's okay. Continue.
So I give myself credit, and I also give myself grace for where I was at the time. I was 20 years old.
When you first got together.
When we first got together. Mm-hmm. And I had just come out of a very abusive, physically, emotionally, verbally abusive relationship. And I ran away. I ran away from the pain, and I started working on a political campaign that he was working on. And we met, and if you've never watched Veep or any political drama, let me just tell you, politics is a cesspool of sex. Like, everyone is fucking everybody. There's no fidelity. There's no, like, I'm sorry if you're married to somebody who works in politics, but that's just, like, that's the truth of the reality of what that environment is. Mm. So we were roommates on the campaign, and then that quickly led to, we were roommates and really good friends. Like, we worked well together, we laughed together, and he brought out all of this shadow side in me that I, like, didn't get to play with as a kid because my family was very religious and I felt very repressed at home. So all of a sudden I could tell, like, really dirty stories, and he had so many dirty stories, and I was like, oh my God, and you're being so honest about it. Like, I was so into it. And then he would say these things like, I don't believe in love. And I was like, I just don't believe that you even believe that. Like, I don't think that that's true, because I see you. You're a caring person. Like, there's a warmth and a tenderness to you. I don't believe that you actually believe that. I think you've been hurt. And I was already saying that, like, to him as friends. I was like, I think somebody fucked you up.
Yeah.
And you don't want to believe in love, but I know that you do.
Yeah.
And so we, after that campaign ended, he was supposed to move in with me in New York. And I was getting stuff ready, and I lived right around the block from my abusive ex. And I had not settled things with him. Like, I just left for the campaign and broke up with him while I was gone, because I didn't want to have to see him. So then I see him, and it's like, I was so unhealed and so, it was bad. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I should be with him again. And in my head, I'm like, this guy might be abusive, but he's saying he wants to marry me. He's saying he loves me. He's saying that he sees this future with me. And this other guy, who I really have this strong connection with, doesn't even want any of that. So what am I doing? So I remember calling Jacob and being like, I'm sorry, this has to be done. Like, you don't want the same things that I want, and I don't want you to change who you are to be with me. And in that whole moment, Jacob, who had never been to my apartment, never driven in New York City, this was before we had apps, before smartphones, found my apartment. And he knew that I was sick. I had a cold. And he brought my favorite flowers and my favorite soup and, like, a fuzzy robe and left it outside my door. And then I saw it and I knew that it was him who dropped it off. So Jacob comes back and I'm having this conversation with him. I'm like, but I don't understand why you would do all of this if you don't even believe in love and you don't believe in marriage. Like, why would you bring all of my favorite things? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I didn't believe in any of that stuff before, but I do now and I want it with you.
Whoa.
And he said that he wanted kids and he could see the whole thing with me.
Oh, wow.
And I'm 20 and have very deep abandonment wounds and very deep betrayal wounds. And so that was like, somebody changed their whole
outlook for me. It's like a movie.
Yeah,
like a movie.
I was like, oh my God, yes. And so I actually what I said was, that's bullshit. But what he said in the beginning was, I don't believe in love. I don't believe in marriage. Now, does he believe in love? I think he does. But does he believe in... Or did he, when we were married, believe in the like what a marriage really was? He wasn't showing that. He wasn't showing that. And I now see that he's made changes and maybe he could be that person for someone, but he still doesn't want kids, right? And I want children. And that's a you've talked about it between the two of you. It's a fundamental thing.
Yeah.
And then in dating since then, you know, I've had guys who say, yeah, I want to try being poly. And then they're with me and they're like, oh no, like I could be monogamous with you. And then they end up cheating on me. So what they said in the beginning was really what they wanted.
Yeah.
Or somebody who says, I'm not really ready for a relationship right now, but then they can't get enough of me. And in my head, I'm like, well, does this mean that like they want a relationship because they're spending all this effort and time on me? And then a few months later or a few weeks later, they pull back and they're like, no, this is gonna, I told you I didn't want a relationship.
Yeah.
It's like, well, fuck. Like their actions or their words might say something else in the moment because they're feeling something different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when someone tells you who they are and what they want, believe that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's powerful.
You know, so you said that he wasn't committed to his personal growth.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I think obviously one of the stereotypes that we think about when we think about men, right, is this idea of like the man that doesn't want to change, that just wants to be alone. And I guess I want to break this down a little bit. Like how, to what extent do you think that is this natural part of like the masculine energy? And to what extent do you think that's like social cues that we've gotten from society that are like toxic, you know?
Yeah, I love this question. So, I mean, I can speak to what I've seen in masculine men and women in my life, and what I've seen within myself, my own masculine, is John Wineland talks about it, like the masculine in all of us, there's a myth for both the masculine and the feminine. And the myth of the masculine is, I will be free when. I'll be free when I have enough money. I'll be free when I have this job. I'll be free when my wife stops bothering me. I'll be free when I come. Like even sex is like a burden. Like I'll be free when.
Yeah.
And there's never enough freedom. And for the feminine, it's the myth is there will be enough love when. Mm-hmm. There will be enough love when I have a partner. There will be enough love when I have a baby. There will be enough love when he compliments me in this dress. Whatever the issue is. But there's never enough, right? There's always a yearning for more. So I think there is an integral part of the masculine in all of us that does just want nothing, like just wants nothingness. And I think that can be really healthy, like having space, having expansiveness, having quiet and stillness is integral. Like it's needed for all of us. And I think where it gets toxic is for the masculine or in any of us to say, because I need space and because I need to feel free, I am not going to take on the work of changing. Like there's a quality to, there's a resistance that comes to changing when you're solely in this nothingness space, right? And it's really tempting to stay there sometimes, but the reason I say, in my opinion, that it's toxic is because we're meant to merge and dance with both energies, right? Mm. So you can't, if you're never going to expand and you're never going to grow and you're never going to have movement in your life, in your psyche, then you're essentially internally dying. Like, to me, if you're not growing, you're dying. Mm. And I think there's a maybe a little bit of a natural predilection in the masculine towards death, right? Mm. Or
the like nothingness.
To the nothingness. Mm. Yeah. And does that answer your question?
It does. It does. Just only because I feel, but I also do think that and I'm only gonna talk from the perspective of men, right? Because I can't talk from any other perspective. But I do think that that's been taken to, yeah, I do think generally speaking, we get these social cues, I think, in our society, like you said, that it does make it toxic where you don't want to evolve for a lot of men. And I think that just, it has to be turned around a little bit, right? Like, it has to be okay for, you know, men, just in this example, to want to evolve. And I think it's just, we're definitely not there, you know? And maybe that's the case that in my own personal experience, I tend to hear a lot of women just say that often, you know, about, you know, it's just sort of the stereotype that I hear. Mm. But you know, I also wanted to ask you too that, you know, like after you separated from your ex, from your ex-husband, and you started to date a little bit, you know, I think that, you know, after a while we start to have deep cravings, certain deep cravings that we want about our relationship. And I wonder if, like, have you identified that maybe perhaps some of these deep cravings are maybe unhealthy, and that like that maybe have, you know, they've come from a traumatic place. And and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes and yes and yes. I have had deep, deep cravings, and they often do come from a really traumatic place. So the cravings have shifted, I think, as I've healed and grown myself. Mm. So when I first got divorced, I was married through all of my 20s, and I had only slept with one other person before I got married. So I had sex with two people when I was 31 and got divorced. And I was like, okay, up this number. Like, the craving was like as much dick as possible. Like, that was the craving. Like, I need to experience this variety. Like, I'm in New York. Like, let's make this happen.
Right.
And that was fun for like a minute. I mean, I'm glad that I experienced it. It was part of what I needed to experience.
Yeah.
But then the craving began to be for, okay, not just sex, but I want intimate sex again. I want connection. Mm. And so that started shifting. And then and I found that. I found a deeply intimate, connected relationship that also was very passionate, and I made the mistake of not holding on to myself. Mm. It was about 6 months after the divorce was finalized, and we met on Tinder, and it was supposed to just be a Tinder one night stand, but the sex was mind-blowing, and it felt like this super intimate connection. He had also just recently gotten divorced, and there was just like, oh, we need to explore this. And there was just so much chemistry and creative alignment. We were right. working a lot creatively together. And I knew in my heart, like, something told me one of the mistakes that I made in my marriage that I wanted to try and rectify was like this idea of feeling like I wasn't worthy of time. Mm. Like the time to be pursued, the time for someone to really get to know me. And that went back to, I mean, my father was married to someone else, and had a child with her 6 months before I was born. So I was completely rejected in utero. Like, that wasn't even. And then there was a lot of sexual trauma in my early childhood. My mom spent all of first grade, all of my first grade in the hospital with leukemia. So I thought I was going to be an orphan by the time I was six. And that's just by six. And then there was a host of other traumas. But they all really fed back to this idea of abandonment and betrayal and worthiness. Like, abandonment, and I feel like abandonment and betrayal are the kind of the states of being that emerge from this deep feeling of unworthiness, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't believe that I was worthy of time. Even to the point, I'll get real vulnerable here. It even goes back to my sexual expression. Like, when I was first figuring out how to masturbate, I didn't have sex until I was, I want to say 19 or 20. Like, I think I had just had sex with someone a few months before I met Jacob, my ex-husband. And I had just started, I just figured out how to masturbate like my sophomore year of college. It took a while.
Right.
Once I did, I remember vividly thinking, like, I have to learn to do this quickly because I know that men don't want to spend a lot of time on this.
Wow.
And so I was literally training my neural system to respond quickly, to release quickly, and to not have any of the fullness that comes with, like, what I know now to be drawn out sexual expression, like time and breath and all of those things. And that was showing up in my sex life, and it was showing up in relationship too. So now, fast forward 15 years after I learned how to masturbate, and I'm with this guy, and I'm feeling all of these like immense feelings of pleasure and connection that I had never felt before, even in my marriage. And within 2 months, he was like, we should move in together. And there was a part of me that's like, I feel like that's not enough time. How does he? I want to say that I know that. I want to say this feels right. But there's a part of me that's like, aren't I worthy of more time? I eloped after 4 months with my ex-husband. So like 2 months and you're asking me to move in. But I didn't listen to that voice. And I said it to him. I was like, are you sure you want this? It seems like really fast. And he said, no, this is what I want. I want you. He had said prior that he was going to move to California. He had said prior that he wanted to be poly. So now he's like, no, I want us committed. I'm staying here. I want us to move in together. So I said, okay. And I did it. And within 2 months of that, he had cheated on me multiple times. And after I forgave him and brought him with me to Puerto Rico, which was like a very vulnerable thing, he was gone a week later. We came back, we had our housewarming party and invited all of our friends. I would think it was like on a Friday, and by Monday he was like, I'm done. So that was completely the wrong choice, and it completely came out of childhood wounding. And there's been different examples like that in my dating life. And about a year and a half ago, I started doing this manifestation workshop practice. And one of the things that was suggested was to ask a few really close people that you trust, where are places that you feel unseen by me, or where are places that you feel like I'm struggling in my life, and if you had the freedom to say it, you would say, like, I really think this could change for you. Mm. And actually, out of the people that I sent it to, Vicky's the only one who responded.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you were the only one. And your response was so spot on, and it was so healing for me. And you said the word that was in my head, but I didn't want to say it. And you said, you have this urgency. There's this urgency around relationship, around connection and intimacy. And I'm getting emotional now, even thinking about it. Because it really, like, there was. And I remember even prior to that, like a few years prior to that, we were I was going through another breakup, and we were all at, I forget what bar we were at, but we were at a bar, and I was really frustrated that I, like, how am I going to meet somebody? I'm just getting older, like, da-da-da. And Vicky, you got frustrated with me, and you were like, Chloe, it's been 3 months since you had sex. I went 3 years at one point, like, not... And I was like, fuck that. I don't want 3 years. Like, I don't have 3 years. That's not what I want to hear right now. But there was you, even then there was this like, what's the rush? Like, what is this urgency? And then a few years later, I was in a space where I could take it in and we could have a conversation. And this word urgency came up. And I was like, that's it. Like, that's it in terms of romance, in terms of work, in terms of creative expression, like all of it. There's an urgency in my life, and it had been derailing a lot of what I really wanted, and it was mm-hmm. taking a toll on my body. Mm-hmm. I mean, I firmly believe it was connected to why I was having so many UTIs. Was this energetic urgency that I was holding on to. And so I got a new therapist who is a somatic therapist and really helps me work with my body and expressing in my body in session. So she was a big part of this journey. And I started really, really looking into, like, where am I being urgent? And even things like getting a tarot reading or a psychic reading about somebody that I wanted to date or a relationship that I was in. I started asking myself, like, why am I really getting this reading?
Yeah.
Is it because there's something that I'm not clear about and I want some understanding and direction? Or is there a fear here that's pushing me to know now, to calm the fear, to soothe the fear? And that's this urgency. And so I've stepped back from a lot of that. And I went into, I'm not saying that it has been a smooth learning. I mean, I went back to somebody that I'd been on and off with for 3 years. It ended after 3 years, but I went back a few times in this past year and a half that I've been working on the urgency thing. And that was that was part of unwinding. And I know that it wasn't going to all unwind at once. Like, there was pieces to it, but it was frustrating feeling like I was keep going back to the same situation. And I knew I was doing it. I was like, I don't know why I keep going back. There's something here. And it's like, there's an urgency that I'm not quite ready to untangle, or I don't know how yet in this situation. And I would say within the last 4 or 5 months, there's been a significant shift. And part of that is I started, in addition to therapy and all of my normal practices, I brought in a trauma release practitioner. I went on a specific nutrition plan to address stuff in my body in a deeper way than I have in ever. and I started microdosing. And that combination, on top of a decade's worth of really intentional growth and like healing, that combination has unlocked something in me. And I truly feel like I don't have that sense of urgency anymore. That relationship, that on and off one for 3 years, ended, like officially ended. And when it ended, I was like, oh yeah, this is complete. Like, there wasn't any anger. There wasn't any bitterness. There wasn't any like frustration. It was just, this is done. And the fact that what I'm saying is I'm recognizing that by changing myself and by really working through this issue of urgency, I'm now starting to see that I'm attracting people who are not being urgent with me.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Woo. Yeah. Something I was really curious about was, so, you know, earlier we kind of referenced the whole masculine feminine polarity piece. Again, another way you could think of it as yin and yang. So we know that that's important for relationship energetics and like having that fuck polarity, right? But how do you hold space for yourself as a single being and also work through that polarity within yourself? What's been something that has helped you do that?
Yeah, good question. So for me personally, I think my answer is going to reflect a lot of my birth chart placements. Because in my chart, I have this tension between Saturn and Jupiter, right? Mm-hmm. Expansiveness and structure.
Yeah.
And there's a real tension of that in my chart, as Vicky knows.
Yes.
And so I've had to work with, like, what place does structure have in my life? Because for a long time, the word structure was very triggering for me. Mm. I was like, no. And I actually discovered this with you all, I think, on a trip to the Poconos. We were talking about it. And I said, it came to me that in my head, I was equating structure with discipline.
Yeah.
And discipline had a really negative connotation for me because of my childhood. And so, of course, I was like, I don't want any part of that. No. And then, Vicky, you said, you were like, but Chloe, you're like the most structured person that I know.
Seriously.
I was like, what? No, I'm not. I'm the free spirit. And you're like, well, yeah, but you also. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, no, it's true. I'm very structured in terms of my cycle and how I eat and how I live and like all of that stuff. But in my head, it doesn't have the same energetic, because I'm thinking about it of a cycle of flow of things like moving into each other. So I think that's where I've started to find like the balance of it, right? Like there's the structure of this week I'm eating this and this is why. And then there's also this like, but it's because I get to play in this energy this week and I get to play in this energy next week. And so there's this playfulness element of it that I'm bringing in my daily life. Things like making sure that I'm devoting enough time to work or to exercise. I mean, I work for myself pretty much. So having structure to make sure that I'm able to do all of the things that I want to do is important. And giving myself time to just play. Like I started taking pole and twerk classes recently. And that's been something I wanted to do for forever. Like I've wanted to do it for forever. And I didn't have the time. I didn't have the money. There was a lot of things. And now I have both. I have time and I have money and energy. Like physically, I'm in a place where I know that I can take this on. And it's been amazing. I've only taken 3 classes. I'm totally addicted. I'm going to be going at least 3 or 4 times a week.
Oh my God.
It's so good. It's so hard. When I say sore in places that like I had no idea, and I am in pretty good shape. I mean, I do lymphatic drainage massage for a living. I'm generally pretty good shape, but I was done. And I looked like an idiot. Like I was covered in coconut oil from work, which you're not, it makes sense. Coconut oil is slippery, so I'm slipping off of the pole. Like I can't grab on. So you're supposed to like lift yourself up and spin, and I couldn't even grab on because I just kept slipping off. But the point is, this like intent, the structure, the masculine side of setting out. Okay, I'm going to do this from 7 to 8 at night, 3 days a week at the studio, and then I show up, and it's this like flow and letting my hips go and letting my ass, like feeling my ass in ways that I never felt my ass before, and seeing my body in these big mirrors and in this dance studio, right? And like just the music is sexy, and it's like I'm in a club and I'm dancing and I'm expressing all of this movement, which I feel like is very feminine, this desire for like movement and change. Like,
yeah,
I'm expressing all of that. And I think it is, I think that then as a single person, that then unlocks this magnetic, attractive energy that brings people in. Just like you had said in a previous podcast, Vicky, that when you change your look, it changes your energy, and then it changes how Key sees you too.
Yeah.
It's the same thing being single. Like I start taking pull and twerk classes, and all of a sudden I'm feeling more confident. I'm like, okay, I'll look back at the apps. I haven't looked at them in a while. And then I'm attracting different people on the apps, or I'm walking down the street and I just feel like, I'm like, oh, I'm like the creatrix of the world. Watch out, bitches. Like, you know what I mean? Like I have this like creative fire stirred up in me, and that's very feminine, and that's very, yeah, but it's because there's this, I've created a container for myself to have that, to make sure that I have that. So that's how it plays into like, my personal like self life. and in dating. I mean, I think this works in marriage too, or in partnership, but I've been in situations dating where I'm like, okay, I am super horny. And this dude is looking at his computer right now and not paying attention to me at all. And this is completely John Wineland, but I've practiced it many times and it works. So imagine you're sitting on the couch, your dude's on his computer or PlayStation or whatever, right? He's not focusing on you and you want him to. Instead of being like, focus on me, I'll start like touching my own legs. I'm breathing and feeling like what it feels like to run my hand over my legs and then on my breast and on my arm. And I'm like feeling really good. And without saying a word, inevitably he will look over and be like, what are you doing? Like, what's happening over there? Like, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm feeling pretty good over here. And then all of a sudden he's like, let's get in on that. Like, that looks like it feels pretty good. But, and that's this like feminine playfulness, and it's also it's very feline. Like, I think of the feminine as very feline. Like, I'm just like, think about my cats, and they just walk in and they're like, their back is arched and they're like walking a little sexy. You know what I mean?
Like, they're just like, them.
Hello, here I am. And they're not jumping on top of you, but they're like, you know you're gonna pet me. Yeah. You know you're gonna pet me. Like, come on. You know you want to. And of course you want to. Like, you're like, okay, I'm gonna put down what I'm doing. I'm gonna play it with my cat. It's the same thing. Like, having that, like, yeah, this is gonna happen. I'm just gonna enjoy it until he figures it out. And then eventually he figures it out. And it's great. It's a very different experience than being like, I'm horny. And I used to do this. Like, literally, I'm horny. Jacob, my husband, would be sitting next to me, and I'd be like, just grab his dick. I'm like, that doesn't work, you know? Like, maybe sometimes it does. But if he's in the middle of something and I just grab his dick, his nervous system is not ready for that. And his response is probably going to be like, what the fuck? Like, I'm in the middle of something, right? But if I'm engaging myself, then there's an allowance to be pursued. There's an allowance to like receive attention that changes the dynamic in the room.
Love that. Yeah.
Man, pole dancing does all that. Damn. Maybe I should try that shit. You know?
Oh my God.
No, so that's interesting. So I was going to actually ask about like the things that we want out of a relationship, right? You know, one of the cliches that we hear is, you know, honesty, right? Truthfulness. Mm-hmm. And, but so I don't know. So for me and Vicky, I think that truthfulness is like really important to us, like really important, actually maybe too important, right? Like at one point in our relationship, we noticed that we were like being too truthful in a way that just wasn't necessary and that it was creating more damage than not. So we actually pulled back. But it is really important to us. And when I mean truthfulness, what I mean is, I don't mean like you having to share everything about yourself, but when there's communication, that idea of like giving your partner like accurate information, that it's being truthful, it's coming from a real place. And so I've noticed though, that with other relationships, people who I know, truthfulness is actually not, it's actually not as important. So for example, like me and Vicky, like, so there could be a lot of little white lies between them. And I've noticed that their ability to forgive each other is really fast, right? And where I think with me and Vicky, I think that white lies, like consistent white lies, would be a huge problem for us, right? So I wonder, what are your thoughts about that? How important truthfulness is to you? And what are other things maybe that you really think you need like within a relationship for yourself personally?
Yeah, good question. I think truthfulness is important, and maybe not for the reason that most people would say. For me, I feel like truthfulness is important because as someone who's very intuitive, as someone who does read emotion and energy pretty effortlessly and pretty well, I'll know that something's off. Like, even, I may not know what it is, but I know that something's off. And then that knowing is going to just fester. And it's going to call in, like, well, I'm going to start questioning, what is off? Is it this? Is it this? And then all of a sudden, everything is on the table and it becomes a much bigger thing than if you were just honest from the beginning. Mm. That being said, I think there is a way to be truthful and be kind and be loving. Mm. And that gets lost, I think, in the conversation around honesty.
That's really true. Yeah. Mm.
You can tell someone, like, this thing that you did broke my heart. Mm. Like, it broke my heart. And that's a totally different energy than coming at them and saying, you're a dick. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you asked something like other things that do matter to me. I think this goes back to one of the lessons that I was talking about earlier. It's just because I know now to believe someone when they tell me something the first time, it's really important to me that your yes be yes and your no be no. Like, if you don't want to do something, don't say that you want to do it just to make me happy. Because you're probably going to have a shit time. And then I'm going to have a shit time because I'm going to pick up on the fact that you're having a shit time, even if you're trying to put a smile on your face. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I just want to ask a question about that. What if the person doesn't know?
Cool. Then say, I don't know.
But I mean, you think you know, but you don't know that place.
I think that's fair. And I try to have grace for when that happens because I do understand that that happens.
Right.
I guess for me, it's like I would rather you take time and like sit with it and then give me an answer than say the first thing that comes to your head. Mm. And then that's not really what you wanted. Like, I think if you could give yourself space to really sit with the question and decide what you want to do, you'd probably come from a much clearer place when you did give me an answer as opposed to just in the heat of the moment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, astrology, human design, we all have different archetypes and structures psychologically within us and psychically. For me, what I've learned is that I am not great if somebody says, hey, what do you want for dinner? Usually, if that's the way they phrase the question, I'll be like, I don't care. Whatever you want, I'm good. But if they said, do you want Thai or do you want burgers? I'll be able to know and I'll be like, no, I want burgers or I want Thai. Like, if I have a clear this or this, I can make a decision. But if it's an open-ended, usually I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So I think before I knew that about myself, I probably was more often in the place where I was like saying yes to things that I didn't really know. Or saying I wanted things that I wasn't really sure because I was answering questions in a way that my body, my brain doesn't process them.
Right.
So now I really try when people ask me an open-ended thing, I try to be present enough to say, would you mind asking that again and like changing the wording a little bit so it's this way so I have a yes or no thing? And that's been really helpful for me. And I'm interested to see how that plays out in relationship.
Yeah.
Like, once I actually am in a relationship with someone.
I love that. I think I have that too.
You do.
In my human design. Yeah. I gotta think about that more. So just one final question I wanted to throw out there was connected to discernment with vulnerability. And just thinking about, you know, the energetic balance or maybe imbalance when we're sharing, especially an intimate connection and to build intimate connection and trust. So I noticed, and the reason I'm asking this is because it's something that has been hard learning for me. I used to think that, you know, when you're intimate with somebody, you share every detail of your life and you do it, you get it out of the way. Right. As if like it's almost like if I had here's my journal, just read the whole thing and then we can move on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a naive approach to building intimacy when you throw in energetics and all these other pieces. Right. So I guess I'm curious about how have you learned to strike the balance of opening up about what you've lived, where you're coming from, and also letting it be something that comes out in a more organic way so that you can actually be more present with the person you're getting to know.
Yeah. You guys should have a podcast or something because you have really good questions. So when I was much younger, I'll use Jacob, my ex-husband, as an example of this, and I think he would agree with me. That's what brought us together, was this kind of trauma bonding. Here's all my shit. Mm-hmm. Here's all my shit. Oh, cool. We have the same shit. We should get together because we understand each other's shit.
Right.
And I don't really do that anymore. I've learned, and it took me a while. It wasn't something that happened like as soon as I got divorced. It took time. But I will, reference, like if a first date, I'll just say that, first date's going really well, like this one that I just had. Right. I did say we were talking about childhood stuff and relationships. And I was like, I'm not going to go into all of the details right now. I'm happy to share as if things progress as we get closer. But for now, I think it's safe to say that I had a lot of trauma in my early childhood and in relationships since then. And I've had to do a lot of healing and working on that to be where I am now. That's a very different conversation than how I would have said it even a few years ago. Because I think I am a very open person.
Mm.
I'm an artist and a performer. And so it's pretty easy for me to just be like, well, yeah, here I am. Here's my life.
Yeah.
Learn from it. You know? And there's a part of me that feels really comfortable
yeah.
in that space.
Sure.
So because I feel so comfortable there, when I'm getting to know someone in the past, I would make the mistake of thinking that connection is the same thing as my artistic expressive connection.
Mm.
And it's not the same thing.
No, right.
Because when you're on stage or when you're writing a song or a poem, there's a piece of vulnerable truth that you're expressing that is no longer really yours once you put it out there, right? Like, it's up to everyone who interacts with that, how they take it in, how it affects them, what they do with it. But when you share that with someone that you're trying to build intimacy with, now it's there. And you have to work with it. Like, you can't not know this thing about someone as you're working through relationship stuff. So if you share all, or for me, if I share all of the intricacies and the details of the trauma, of the abuse, of all of this stuff, when I'm getting to know someone, if I share it too fast, it's like, again, it goes back to this being worthy of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't something that you can just take and absorb. This is something that you're going to be absorbing, and it's going to be affecting how you treat me.
Yeah.
It's going to be affecting the words that you use around me. It's going to be affecting the sex that we have. So it's not just I can express this and give it as a gift. It's I'm expressing this, and this is now a building block that is either going to be building us up or building a wall between us.
Mm.
And so I'm much more careful about how much I share. I still think it's important for people to know, like, I'm coming with stuff sure. that I've put down for the most part and worked through, but I also know that things could come up. And so here's where I am, here's who I am. And then as I get to know the person more and I feel safer and I feel like they can provide a container for what I'm about to share, I'll share more and more and more.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh.
You know something? I really like podcasts. I like having these conversations.
Love having these conversations. Thank you so much, Chloe, for letting us interview you on your podcast.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
This is so much fun. Thank you both for doing it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
My many names. Call me by my many names. Reina, Queen, Diosa,
goddess, yes, yes, of love, of sensuality, of intuition, of magic, of ecstasy. But make no mistake, I contain multitudes. The one who can contain me will revel in all the women within me. The fire that lights you can burn you down. The sword that defends you can cut to the heart of your lies. The earth that grounds you can swallow you whole. The ocean that melts you can beat you with her rage. Call me by my many names. La hija del pirata, the pirate's daughter. La que sabe, she who knows. Never mistake me for just one. I am life and death. I am rebirth, transformation incarnate. I am the queen of reinas. I am la reina de las piratas. Respect the multitudes before you step to me, because you will see my power if you come questing as my king. Be prepared to chase the sun or face the fierceness of my shadow. Con amor, the pirate queen.